You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Matthew Garcia. Matthew, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Matthew, I know you're in the Bay Area. You're calling me from California. What are you working on at the moment? What if it's more than one thing, what's occupying you now?
Yeah, well, most recently, currently, I'm doing a residency in Tucson, Arizona, and through that residency, I'm going to be working on the desertification cookbook, which is basically a sort of kind of guide to thinking about living in kind of in the desert lands and also the borderlands. So the idea is the cookbook is it's basically an artist book with recipes for kind of living and surviving in the desert lands. Everything from eating to, I mean, what is beautiful living in the deserts? And so that I'll be working on that project for the next year in Tucson, Arizona. And so that's most currently, but also
The residency is a year long in Tucson?
Yeah. So the residency is a year long. The desertification cookbook, I started working on it about several years ago, but I'm going to use this time in Tucson to really kind of push it to completion.
So tell me more about the cookbook. Maybe we could talk about one chapter or part of it that you're particularly satisfied with, because that'll allow us to get into more about just what you're doing.
So the cookbook was kind of the Desert Art Lab, the art collective, conceptualized it a couple of years ago. And the idea is, we started Desert Art Lab really to engage initially like really local desert topics. I mean, it was a way to kind of really while we were working in Phoenix, Arizona, it was a way to really engage what it means to live in the deserts and how to do that sustainably, and also how to like honor indigenous desert food practice and cultural practice in the process. And as we continued to work on that project, we realized, these topics of deserts are what we were really focused on. Our local conversation, it became clear this is an important topic beyond our little local community. I mean, you have basically deserts are growing. They're projected to expand throughout the world. From Sub-Saharan Africa to the Southwest. I guess one of the really kind of interesting bits of research that we kind of stumbled upon was the 100th meridian, which is that line that divides like the drier part of the United States from the more the parts of the United States that get more moisture, has actually moved east a few hundred miles, and so it. So, like, we became clear to us that there is a conversation that went beyond where we started in Phoenix about what does it mean to live in a desert, but what is it going to mean in 100 years or 200 years as deserts expand and more people are going to have to be, will be living in these conditions. So the idea was the cookbook would be this guide for not just, like, surviving in the desert, but, kind of loving the desert, believing in it, and, kind of having this... I think when we started doing this work, there was this idea that expanding deserts is like, it's kind of expanding wasteland and expanding kind of almost like apocalyptic language. And we said, being from the deserts, we were like, it's actually the desert. We love the desert. So how can we have a conversation about what actually works in the deserts? And one of the main things we focus on in our work is food practice.
And when you say we, so who's working on that in the residency?
So me and April Bohorquez, we're basically the main kind of creators of Desert Art Lab. So she is a curator and artist and educator. And we work on the Desert Art Lab projects together. Most of them, when we can. Sometimes it's not, we're not in a situation where both of us can go to it.
Okay, and so during this residency, what portion of it are you going to like explore? What do you see happening in the coming months or years?
Yeah, so Tucson's really interesting because it's an exciting place for food practice, desert food practice, and so the conversation there is really mature as far as like desert foods and cultural practice. So what we want to do, what the cookbook is it's not just us. It's a community engaged project where the cookbook is also the voices of people who live in the desert currently. It's not just us. It's us. So we'll be curating, in a way, conversations that we come upon and through the year that we're there. So we just started that. So I'll be going to Tucson tomorrow to really actually kick off the process. So over the next, from now till April or May of next year, I'll be in the process of making that.
And when you talk about the desert, because I'm not familiar with that area of the country, how much land is that? What does that encompass for you when
you're talking about local
people and everything? Like, how far out are you going?
Yeah, so the Southwest, so this is the interesting part about, like, the desert regions of the U.S. When you talk about the kind of like the dry land zones of the Southwest United States, you're talking about everything from southern Colorado all the way down to the Mexico border, east to around Kansas, about the 100th meridian, and then west to California. So it's a map. I mean, this is the kind of Southwest desert land. So we've worked in much of that area. So as an artist collective, we've done projects in basically all regions of this desert zone, from Arizona to Colorado to New Mexico to California. So we've spent probably the last 10 years really invested in like learning about the space, and it's big, you know. And what's interesting about it is the desert areas have been they're not like, you can go to desert areas in southern Colorado or New Mexico and it's very common for people to say, I don't live in the desert. Actually, this isn't a desert. And so in our early days, Desert Art Lab really was trying to like promote this idea that it's okay to be in a desert. And in fact, in a lot of the desert regions around the Southwest of the United States, you'll find that there's this culture of separating like domestic space from the desert. So you'll have like, you know, the green lawns in the middle of the desert. And people will create these domestic spaces that completely are, they're artificial, but they're reality for people. So they don't even really engage the desert space at all. And so in our early stages, that was what Desert Art Lab was about. It was about saying, you know, like, let's tear the grass out and bring the desert ecological space back in to our lives. And that's what we did. We've done projects all over the Southwest in that spirit.
And let's talk a little bit about some of those projects. Maybe we could mention one of them, something that sticks out to you, that really was either successful or surprising, or however you want to talk about it, but something that sticks out that'll sort of give us a sense of a little bit about the culture. Because I feel like I'm alien to that sort of culture, too. I don't know what is so different about the desert, other than, it's hotter or there's different.
Well, the main thing is there's less water. So less, what grows in the desert is really important. So, with less water, you have a whole other different ecology and a whole different food practice that was formed in the desert. So one of the projects that we are really proud of, and that is an ongoing project, is our field site in southern Colorado. So we, about 3 years ago, we established an ecological installation in a town called Pueblo, Colorado, which is where I'm from. I'm born in, it's my home. And so the idea was here is we purchased a plot, a vacant, degraded plot of land in the urban center of the town. And, basically this plot of land was, in a lot of ways, it was degraded to the point where, or desertified to a point where it was almost nothing could live on it anymore. It was scraped, almost like dead land. And that, that was important for us to find a really degraded piece of land to kind of to start this project on. And what we have done over the last 3 years is we established indigenous desert ecological growth installation. So it's a living installation. So what we did is we're trying to reestablish like the native ecology from the area on this dead piece of lot. And the first phase was to plant 200 Cholla cactus. And each phase will introduce new plants, but it was really important for us to start with the Cholla. And so it's this land. I mean, it was, when I mean dead land, I mean, it was so hard. The earth was so hard and degraded that just to get into the earth, we had to use a jackhammer just to get earth broken up so we could plant our wow. first phase of ecology. And you know, of course, it was important for us to have it in the middle of a neighborhood. These areas of southern Colorado are traditionally Chicano, Chicana, Chicanx communities. These communities have been in the southern Colorado region for many, many, many generations. Many of them, many in the community, claim indigenous identities. And you know, sometimes the desert is, while you know it's been a part of our life, it's removed from us. So we wanted to put this in urban space. And you know, while we were developing this project, many in the community would come and say, you know, nothing's going to ever grow here. It's dead. You know, kind of thing. This land is, it's, nothing can grow here. So once we were able to get all these plants in, you know, the idea for us was that, you know, you work with what is there. You know, you work with what the environment is. You don't work against it. You work with it. So by bringing in what is the space, we were, you know, hoping that that would be the symbol of like how we can work with our environment. And, you know, 2 years later, 3 years later, all the plants are alive, they're thriving. And
what kind of plants are growing there?
Well, our first round was Cholla cactus. So the Cholla cactus are a really important plant because they live in a very extreme environment. So the cactus it's a high desert in southern Colorado. So what's unique about that is it's cold. So it has very little water, and it gets really, really cold in the winter. So these plants can endure, you know, you're talking in the middle of the winter, you can get minus 20 degree kind of windows of weather. And then in the summer, you can get 110. And there's also very little water. So these things are extremely resilient. And what's also important about them is there's a food practice tied to it. So the site is also eventually going to be an entry point into like, well, how do we eat in the desert? What was food practice like in the desert, you know, 300 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago? And so the site acts as a point to kind of get into that as well. Which in the next year we'll be able to actually do some food practice at the site because the plants will be at a point where we can, they're perennial. It's a perennial food practice. So we don't like harvest them, but we can take things from them to engage that. But the project, that field site is something that when we got into it, we really envisioned this site we want to establish several phases of ecological growth. And really, something like this, you're talking, 20 to 10 to 20 years. So the project is ongoing, and the duration, it's a durational project, and the duration will be probably 10 to 20 years. And so, you know, that kind of project is one that we feel really, you know, we're excited about. It's a very slow, it's a long project, but we're excited about the progress. And it really makes you think about time a little differently. You know, it makes you when we do work at the site, you really think about you know, slowing down, and that's also important for us.
So that's clear. Thanks for explaining that project, which is fascinating. You know, after the residency or these other projects you do, are these also shown in exhibition spaces? Like, how do you manage an exhibition?
So when we first established our ecological installation in Southern Colorado. So we bought land, and we actually got a creative capital to start the project. So that gave our project a lot of attention. We would have done all this work anyway, but that gave us a lot of, you know, funding help, and also just kind of got the word out about how we work. And really right away we were invited to do exhibitions based on the initial installation, phase of the installation that we're putting in Southern Colorado. So we have exhibited the first phase of the installation, I think probably around 6 or 7 spaces around the country. And how we approached that was we really thought about it as, you know, almost like an excavation process. So we really did a documentation of what this dead site was before we got into it. Everything from sound to every weed was documented, and we did every single piece of trash or glass bottle where we saw as artifacts of the site as it existed when we started. So we archived all that. All those things went into the exhibit that we sent around. All the research we did when we did the mapping, believe it or not, there's like a level of logistical work when you're actually putting in an installation into land that has never been surveyed before. So this was a kind of a weird little plot of land in the middle of the city that was kind of literally off the grid. And so all these became kind of artifacts of the process that then would go into exhibition. And so as an exhibition exists, it currently exists like that. Botanical presses. So as we start growing things, we'll record some of the growth through botanical press process, and that also goes into the exhibition.
Now, what does that mean, botanical press process?
So literally, we will, as some of these plants are growing, we will clip them, and then we'll go through a process that plant biologists use, where you basically make a press out of them, and you dehydrate them, and then you display them on a cardstock, and you put them in a frame. And that's the process of kind of the botanical press process. So our field site, while we were growing Cholla there, we have a couple other sites in the Pueblo area that we've been doing tests for like probably 6 years. So our field site is the thing that's open to the public, but we have a studio that we've been testing lots of different kinds of growth. And that hasn't made it to the field site yet, but it's at our studio. And that's everything from in those spaces, we grow a lot of weeds, like literally weeds. So one of the cool things about our research that we found is a lot of the things, and the way we find this stuff is the weird thing about this is the way that we found out a lot about the growth is through family. It's through family stories, aunts, really talking to grandparents, stuff like that. Cause,
you mean growth? You mean what types? What do you mean the way you found out?
Yeah, for instance, some of the weeds that we grow are food. And currently they are defined as being weeds. So you'll walk through the desert or you'll walk in the urban part of Pueblo and you'll see a certain plant, and it's a calite. It's been eaten in the desert lands for 1,000 years. It's a green, but currently it's seen as a weed. So those plants, we would collect the seeds from these weeds, and we'd start growing them intentionally. And so there's a series of plants that we do that with at our studio space, and those are annuals. And so these are all like the little parts of the show. So when we go to exhibition, we have these botanical presses, and each one of these plants has a story. So like the Cholla, we really think about each of the different plants that we put into our projects as like characters in the story about our place. The amaranth is a really interesting plant. It has an interesting story. The calite, the Cholla, I talked about the Cholla. The Cholla is really important because one thing I didn't mention is that, you know, I was telling you about how hard that earth was, how we needed to use a jackhammer. What the Cholla can break, once you plant it into this really hard soil, the Cholla will crack through that hard earth and actually soften it up. and return organic material back to the earth. And other plants can't live in that soil, but the cholla can. So this idea of like healing the earth and like, you know, kind of regenerating the soil, the cholla becomes that plant that can do that for us. And then, you know, it's where other plants just wouldn't make it. You know, they wouldn't be able to get through that space. And again, most importantly, the cholla has an ancient food practice tied to the land and to the region. All the plants that we choose, that we identify, that we work with, are tied to an indigenous desert food practice and ecological practice. So, and a lot of the ways we learned about this was from our families who, you know, basically have ties to the desert. And also that's been reinforced by research in the area, ethnobotany and stuff like that.
Fascinating. So good luck with this, the rest of the book. And you called it a cookbook. So will there be, isn't that what you said? Will there be recipes in there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be everything from eating, you know, from like how to identify plants, how to grow, how to eat, you know, to just simple things like, you know, again, the desert's been seen as a hostile place, and from our perspective, it is not. You know, so how do we think about being in this space? How do we see beauty in the desert? And that's important to us because, you know, in the deserts, you will find certain places just get covered in grass because that's the symbol of, you know, health and beauty. Aesthetically, currently, like main dominant culture, dominant like aesthetics, would see green things as healthy and vibrant. Where in the desert, you know, it's not green, but it's healthy and vibrant. So how do we rethink about beauty? Really, how do we rethink beauty in our desert lands? And so that's the idea of the cookbook. Yeah, but on a more like practical level, yes, there will be like, you know, recipes for engaging some of these food practices, which a lot of them we try to focus on are the things that you don't normally see as things to eat, like the weeds and the cactus, but can, you know, grow with almost no water in the desert, most importantly.
That's just no fascinating. So good luck with the residency. Enjoy the residency. And
thank you.
I want to ask you one more question. What is it that you're reading at the moment? I ask everybody.
You know, one of a big kind of researcher in the area that's been a big help for us is an ethnobotanist named Enrique Salmon, and he wrote a book a couple years ago called Eating the Landscape, and it's basically a journey through the Southwest deserts and like the practice of kind of cultivating a landscape for eating. And, you know, basically this through this journey you read in this publication, Eating the Landscape, you find that this is a journey and a process that's been going on in the Americas for thousands and thousands of years where, you know, food was not just grown in the, like, annual traditional farming way, but it was cultivated through an ecological system, and it was intentional. And so that book, Eating the Landscape, is a really important one for us, and we it kind of adds a lot of, like, research and kind of a journey through the whole Southwest region that has been inspiring for us.
Well, Matthew, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's really been a pleasure. I wish you great success with what you're doing.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.